order the Personnel Legislative and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting for December 12th, 2017, 6:30 p.m. Notification of open meetings law is posted on the back wall. Announcement of a meeting procedure. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda and for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Fowler.
Here.
Grunwald.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
Jab.
Here.
And Fred.
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
A move.
A motion.
Second.
Second. Any questions? Roll call.
Grunwald.
Here.
Yes.
John Conley.
Yes.
Jab.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
All right. We have proof of publication of tonight's meeting. Affidavit will be part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation on 2018 Pay Program Administration Manual. John Winkler, Gene Tate, and Ashley. Don't ask me to pronounce your last name.
Tamala.
It's easier.
Silverstone Group.
Good evening. In December of each year, the Board of Directors makes a review and recommendation of the district's pay program administration manual. The manual outlines the district's pay program administration, pay structure, performance review, rating scale, annual pay increases, review schedule, etc. To ensure market competitiveness, Silverstone Group conducts a market analysis of the district job descriptions every 4 years. The 2017 market analysis was approved by the board at the October 13, 2017 meeting. At that time, I briefed the approved analysis findings would be incorporated to the 2018 PAVE program manual and brought to the subcommittee and board in December. In your books, you will find an amended highlighted version of the PAVE program administration manual for 2018. Changes to the manual include: the update to the pay structure is proposed by the market analysis and approved by the board at the October 13th meeting. Eliminating the length of service pay grades at the 15 and 25-year mark. Eliminating the length of service pay grade increases at the 7-year mark effective as of December 31st, 2020. Updating the compensation for temporary duty, which would authorize the general manager to compensate employees to perform additional work for an employee in a lower grade position when the absence is for a period of 3 months or 60 working days consecutively. There will be no cost of living adjustment for 2018. So the staff recommendation is that the subcommittee recommends to the board that the amendments to the Pay Program Administration Manual for 2018 be adopted and incorporated to the District Policy Manual. And Ashley and I are here to address any questions.
Can we first have a motion on this item?
I move approval of staff recommendation.
Second.
Is there anyone in the public who wishes to speak to this item? Directors?
I have. Go ahead. What is the net monetary effect of these proposed changes on the pay scale? No, total costs more or less the same.
I think it was about roughly the same because there was no automatic increase to anyone's pay. It just adjusted some of the pay ranges that people's pay potential could reach. So there was no automatic dollar value assigned to the increases or to the adjusted pay structure.
Our overall average is about a little less than a 3% increase across all employees. Now, obviously, some are higher, some are lower, but that's the average. And that's been consistent throughout the year. Mm-hmm. This gets us down the path of more of a merit-based system and not a system where everybody gets the same. It's really on pair performance. And the governor was bragging about that, but we did it.
There are a number of other corporations and companies in and around Omaha that are doing this type of thing.
Yes.
And that's why we're switching.
Yes, it is best practice to follow a market-based approach where individual pay, so you set pay range is based on market, and then individual pay decisions are based on performance in a job.
And that's solely up to the supervisors or general manager Winkler, or who's deciding?
Well, the very first evaluation is done by the employee and the supervisor, and then depending on the chain of command that they follow, it goes either the assistant general manager and then the general manager for endorsement, or sometimes depending on, again, the chain, sometimes it goes employee, supervisor.
It's all the above. Everyone's involved in the appraisal, and then ultimately the ranking, the employee, the supervisor, myself, and Marlon. So there's about four sets of eyes on each appraisal.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
In your methodology of determining our lease and doing your studies up, how many data points do you have? So when you take a job and you compare it to how many other companies, is it all public? Is it private? What are your numbers there?
We looked at organizations from all industries of similar size, and we generally try to get information from five different salary surveys, and each salary survey can have hundreds of organizations that participate.
And within that, you're identifying a certain job position.
Correct, based on the job description.
And when you do that, does that include just the salary, or does it include salary and pension?
It is cash compensation, so essentially base salary is the focus of the market analysis. Mm-hmm.
Does anybody do it with the pension in it?
Some organizations will look at a total compensation study. So in addition to looking at cash compensation, some organizations will also do a benefits study where they will look at retirement benefits, health insurance, really all of the rewards that an employee would receive in return for their work and their efforts. So some do take a very holistic approach. Some, for the most part, a lot of the projects we do are more focused on compensation, but there are some that do look at both.
So how do we get a feel for how we're compared in that scenario?
So you could take the study a step further then and do an analysis on the benefits that are offered as well to see if there's a very rich benefits package being offered or if the benefits package is more lean, then that can certainly affect where an organization would target their pay in relation to the market. For the most part, organizations tend to target that middle of the road, the 50th percentile. For some reason, unless things are very rich or very lean, then they may adjust their approach accordingly.
But we right now do not have access to that.
That was not gathered as part of the study. It was just a compensation study, so no.
But that can be done.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Larry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering about, when I see here, eliminate the length of service pay grade increases at 15 and 25. Year mark, eliminate the length of service pay grade increases at 7-year mark, and so forth. Are the employees okay with that? Have they been comprised of this? Are they all on board? Are they had permission to speak freely? Are they all okay with this?
Well, this was first brought to the board in May, so staff has had a lot of time to discuss it, and the board actually approved the salary grade and the length of service at last month's meeting to eliminate. Yeah. So, John, you may want to address.
Not everybody's happy with it, but you're never going to get 100% satisfaction with any type of change to a system that's been around for a while. But what the system did is it skewed our pay district wide nearly $100,000. Mm-hmm. And so that became, we have a responsibility not only to the employees, but also to the taxpayer. And so that became an issue when everybody automatically got a grade increase at 7, 15, and 25, regardless if they were an average employee or a high performing employee. Well, in order to get to that merit-based, performance-based system, and we took that away. And then also the board gave me the authorization to, if an employee performs exceptionally over a several-year period, I have the ability to give them an extra 1% upon what, or added on to what they get in their normal appraisal system. So we reward those employees who go above and beyond each and every year, regardless if they're here for several years or 25 years. And so that's why we kind of switched that automatic with one that it's more of a performance system.
Okay, but still, is it, may we have some employees here to testify?
Anybody want to,
you know, in one way or the other, and that they have permission to speak freely. And, you know, if they, you know, because if it's a majority of them are okay with this, or a majority of them are not okay with this, this stuff, I want to get a sense of feel of that, how the employee.
We have 52 months. So if.
We did have a vote.
But they know about it, that this vote.
They know about
for the board.
Okay, well, it was approved in October.
So all we're doing is incorporating those changes that were approved in October into the pay program.
October of what?
Of 2017.
Yeah. No. 2 months ago.
Thanks for reminding.
Been a long 2 months.
Yeah. The employees are okay. You know, just I want to go that extra mile and make sure they have a say in it.
You were Ruth Hutton, weren't you?
Yeah, maybe.
Any additional questions?
I have just one more. I don't know if this was in the scope of your evaluation, but addressing any vacation, personal days, and so forth, sick day carryovers, is that typical for most companies to accumulate those, or do they have to use them in the year that they're in?
So a lot of organizations will base their sick or vacation time on years of service, so there will generally be different years of service categories. A lot of times we'll see whatever their annual accrual is. We'll see 1.5 times that as the maximum allowed in their bucket or their bank.
So there's a limit
and so,
on how much
yes,
they can accumulate.
Yes, there's a limit on how much they can accumulate.
Is that the way it is for this company?
We have a limit as well.
Okay, that's my question.
And you have to use it or lose it once you reach that limit.
Thank you. That's all.
Any other questions? Roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brunwald.
No.
Chairperson.
Aye.
Item number 7, review and recommendation on update to the employee handbook. John Winkler, Gene Tate, Marnie Jensen. Hush back, Bill. Thank you.
Well, let me start by introducing Marnie Jensen from Hush Blackwell. She handles our employee labor relations situations for the district, and so we're happy to have her here with us. So attached for your review and consideration is a marked-up version of the Papio NRD employee handbook. Most of the changes for the handbook are housekeeping in nature. The other changes to the handbook include a flex time work schedule, eliminating compensatory leave, and updating compensation for temporary duty. The flex time work schedule would assist the district in achieving optimal productivity, provide methodology for balancing personal responsibilities and professional work demands, and facilitate the recruitment and retention of a diverse workforce. It would reduce the amount of overtime paid to non-exempt employees when scheduled to work after hour meetings and events. With supervisor approval, it would allow exempt employees the flexibility to schedule their work hours when they are required to attend after-hour meetings and events. Employees would still be required to work 37.5 hours a week or more per week. Having a flexible work schedule will eliminate the need for compensatory leave. Changes to the compensation for temporary duty, as we just discussed in the last one, is just kind of bringing that in line. Would authorize the general manager to compensate employees that perform additional work for an employee in a lower grade position when the absence is for a period of 3 months or 60 working days consecutively due to long-term disability, maternity leave, FMLA, etc. So staff's recommendation to the subcommittee is that you recommend to the board that the amendments to the district's employee handbook be adopted and incorporated into the district's policy manual. And Marnie and I are here to address any questions you might have.
We have a motion.
Motion, staff recommendation.
Motion, staff recommendation. Do we have a second? Second. Is anyone from the public who wishes to speak to this item? Directors?
Just a brief question.
Director Connolly?
I've got a question. We talk about compensation for temporary duty.
when they're filling in for somebody in a lower grade? What happens if they're going in, they're filling in for somebody that's in a higher grade? How is that addressed in here?
It's already in here, and there is a specific formula that that determines how much they get compensated.
Somebody said it's on page 10. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the generic question was, so if you're filling in for somebody, you would get your regular duty pay plus an additional amount based on whose determination?
The general manager.
Okay, and it would be a, what would that, a guideline would be what?
I would say that the determination would be the demand that was placed on the supervisor filling in.
Right. It would be automatic, and I would sit down with, you know, probably myself and the assistant general manager and that supervisor, that person that, that filled in for that position to get some type of a fair percentage. I would say it would vary across situations, and it very rarely happens. But we did have an instance where, if you know, for example, someone resigned, and the supervisor was all of a sudden filling in for that position, where we're a small staff anyway, they did quite a bit of work, and so it was only fair that and it was Zach's employee that, and we sat down, Zach sat down and said, okay, what is a fair percentage to compensate them for that, and it wasn't, I forgot what the percentage was, but. It was fair. And so we thought that we should have that ability in the policy to be able to do that both ways, higher or lower.
All right. Thank
you. Any other questions? Roll call.
Jeff.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Glenn Wald.
Yes.
John Conley.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
All right. Marty, thank you for speaking.
I really feel that I was value add tonight, so thanks for inviting me. It's good to see you all. I'm not a person you want to see often. Have a great night.
Thank you. I think we're adjourned. Thanks.
Mr. Conley?
We'll move right ahead with the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee. I need Kim Fowler, you're filling in for Patrick Leahy, please.
Yeah. Thumbs up.
Okay. All right, roll call, please.
Greg Conley?
Here.
Lady? Caesar?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Fowler?
Here.
John.
Yes. I failed to mention a copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted on the rear of the room, and with that, now moving ahead to adoption of the agenda.
I moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yeah.
Thompson?
Yes. Yes. I have here an affidavit of proof of publication of tonight's meeting notice, and we'll put that with the permanent archives of this meeting. Now moving ahead to item 6 is a review and recommendation on the interlocal agreement with the City of Gretna on sanitary sewer main extension around the WP2 project. Amanda Grint, please.
Hi, good evening. I'm going to introduce Steve Perry with Olmsted & Perry, the city engineer for the city of Gretna.
Evening.
And also, Bob Gregalunas is here from FIRA Engineering, too, so keep that in mind if you have any questions. So if we could go to that first map, maybe. So for consideration tonight is an interlocal agreement with the city of Gretna that involves a sewer main extension, I guess, around the proposed WP2 project. So the WP2 project is flood control reservoir at about 180th and Giles, and it was one of the 6 priority reservoirs that we're working on. The preliminary design to be completed in about March of this year. Of course, we're in the middle of it. And the city of Gretna had a prior commitment to extend a sewer main through this area for some upstream development, and that's going on right now, grading, maybe even has some streets paved. So they were working on the assumption that we had a concept layout for this. It was really draft, though, originally before we started this work with FIRA Engineering. So they had laid out a sewer along this north side here around the spillway. But then, as they moved forward with their design and as we moved forward with the preliminary design and laid out that spillway a little better, we found that the sewer line would have to relocate. This is up a hill pretty far, and it got really deep, you know, in excess of 40 feet deep for that sewer, which was causing Gretna some issues, but that was not the worst of the issues even. So then, through the geotechnical analysis, that was, we still don't even have all the final studies, but from the initial analysis, this very unusual soils, and nothing we've seen before on any of the Papio reservoirs, there's a lot of sand and very fine sand. And so that caused some changes to the layout of the dam embankment, and what that seepage berm on the backside might look like. And as that shifts, the spillway could move. And so we were just really too uncertain to continue with the route. Even it wasn't ideal for Gretna anyway, but it was also just too uncertain to lay that out right now. So we then, I say we, Steve, really looked at the layout on the south side here. And this also doesn't look ideal, and you're right. It is super messy. There's a major gas line right here, along with sewer from Tiburon, sewer from the Palisades, all right in this area. So you may think coming around this all would be a good idea, but the sand there, you're also coming uphill as you do that, and you get, again, 30, 40 feet deep. But this time you're in sand, which would be really hard to construct and excavate. So the long story there is that this layout is what has been determined as the best layout, even though it is kind of a messy layout. But in working on all of that layout, which they intend to bid this, I believe, in January,
Correct.
So that construction can get underway, because there will be houses using the sewer line, you know, early summer, if not late spring, early summer. So they need to get busy with this bidding. So the interlocal agreement, the elements of that, we've coordinated with them on elements that we believe are fair to the sewer alignment, and the city of Gretna would agree to design, bid, and construct the sewer. They would obtain any right-of-way outside of this shaded blue area, which is, that's the property that the board has approved purchase from Celebrity Homes, so the district could give right-of-way on those shaded pieces. And that is an element that we would do that at no cost to the city. And then the city also agrees to construct this in such a manner that the manholes are above the 100-year flood elevation, which would be standard, what we would propose for around the reservoir. And the district responsibilities would be reimbursing for, it would be based on actual bid costs when those come in, but it would be the actual bid cost for the additional length that it took to run along this south side, which turns out to be around 700 linear feet of additional pipe length. And then also we would reimburse, we'll zoom in a little on the dam and show, thank you, right there. So this shaded area is the dam embankment, and the red is the alignment of the proposed alignment of the sewer, and you see it has to go under the embankment. And so in order to do that, we worked with the state dam safety department and determined there would have to be a casing pipe and some supports and some additional manholes to make that system work and be meet the criteria of the state dam safety. So the district would pay that additional cost to get that under. And again, the reason why we're doing that is because here's the easement for this big gas line, and we can't put manholes or anything in that easement. So we're pretty tight with how we have to make this work. And so coming under the dam embankment is appears to be about the only way. So I think those are the details. The estimated cost is about $300,000. So we propose that the cost share be up to $300,000, although it will be based on actual bids, which we hope would be a little lower than that. We would reimburse them after the fact, and we intend to use money from the watershed fund balance to pay that. And it would be probably reimbursed in our fiscal year 19, which starts July 1st. So we would potentially be able to budget that in FY19, although we still have details of that. There could be one payment. With that, if there's any questions, we recommend that the general manager be authorized to execute an interlocal with the city of Gretna in order to extend that sewer main. And I did just one more point that I kind of forgot when I, you know, that big mess of sewers and gas main in there. One thing this project does that is a big benefit to the W2 project down the road is that we would have had to realign those sewers anyway. They were going under the embankment as it was, the sewer that serves Tiburon. And so this kind of does all that in one project, which really saves us from, you know, even having to mobilize a sanitary sewer contract for that project and saves that work being done at that time. So it does gain us, you know, moving forward.
Chair, I entertain a motion on this item.
I move staff recommendation.
Is there a second, please?
Second.
I have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Fowler?
Yes.
Hazer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Interperson?
Yes. Now moving ahead for review and recommendations on easement 312. Thank you for being here. You had to say a lot. Is your proposed easement to SID 312 in Sarpy County for Lincoln Road improvements? Amanda Grint again, please.
Okay. Bill, I put a map in the folder for presentation. I feel like you could maybe pull that up. Look, dude, I realized I didn't have an overall map. So this is, last month we talked about easements for Papillion at WP6, and this month we're talking about easements to Sarpy County and WP7, and really all of that is just because there's so much development going on out there that all the roads are in the works to be improved, and so it's starting to impact some of the projects. So this, if we could just, so I can see the bottom a little bit, that'd be perfect. It's just an overall map before we get into the details. But so this is the proposed WP7, and Cornhusker will eventually be extended up here. The old 108th Street curves around, and this is what we're going to be talking about here, this Lincoln Road. Lincoln Road is being extended across here. And it really, it's a county road. But the deal that they have worked out through an interlocal agreement is that SID 300 is leading the charge on that road, and Sarpy County, the Papillion School District, and the other SIDs, there's two other SIDs around here that are contributing to that financially and however. So it's a county road, but SID 300 is leading the charge. So we have a grade stabilization structure right here on this 108th Street. So the water comes down the channel into an inlet. It drops about 4 to 5 feet and then outlets down in the channel bottom right here. And that helps keep this grade up here from, you know, getting deeper and unraveling there. So it's about maybe 40 years old. It's an NRCS structure that's been there for a while. When the Lincoln Road over, and I should say the flood pool comes all back in here for that structure. And then, Bill, if we can go to the map that were with the memo, maybe we can zoom in a little bit. But you can imagine, of course, in order to build Lincoln Road, they have to fill in the flood pool there for the road construction. And so the easements that are before you tonight are, thank you, that's perfect. Is the first one is a temporary grading easement, and what that allows them to place the fill for this road, and then this hatched area is where they will excavate in order to make up that volume for that structure. So we've worked with them for a number of different scenarios, and this was the best one. This provides the same amount of storage and grade stabilization, but allows them to fill the road, and it also allows them to 108th kind of swept up this way, and now it's going to have this little connection. Once Cornhusker Road is built, and that's going to be over the, it'll be built on the downstream berm of WP7, but it it's not really part of our project. It will be built there, but it will be built when development calls for it. And when that happens, 108th Street will be vacated. So this is just kind of a temporary connection until Cornhusker is built. So that's the temporary grading easement. And then maybe the next page, Bill. Perfect. Does that work? So then that hatched area, again, is temporary grading that allows them to excavate and make up the flood storage, allows them to do this connector to 108th. And then there's two permanent storm and drainage easements. One of them will go to the county, and it's this purple color, and that's just to extend the box culvert and some riprap as that culvert comes under Lincoln Road. And the other is to SID 312, which has just a stormwater pond outlet into that same excavated area there. So those are the three easements that are proposed. We recommend that the general manager be authorized to execute those. If there's any questions, I know Caleb Beasley is here from ENA, and ENA is representing the SID. They're doing the Lincoln Road design work.
I'd like to move staff right.
Is there a second, please?
Second.
Now, anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Thompson.
When I read this, I didn't read there's any dollar amount that we're going to expend, so it's like no dollars?
No.
All right.
If an easement, it will have physical features in the easement, so it needs to come forward. No money.
Great. Thanks.
It's easy to approve, then, isn't it? Any other comments, please? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Beasley?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Yes. Now moving to item 8 is the Elkhorn River Habitat Area Mentored Use Hunt Agreement with Nebraska Game and Parks. Good evening, Eric.
Good evening, everyone. Can you pull up the map to start with? Just to kind of give you an idea of the area we're discussing, the district owns land. From this map on the right side, you can see the Elkhorn River, slightly narrower. On the left side, the Platte River, quite a bit wider, more sandbars. So this land is between the two rivers. From the top, there's a little access point, but basically the end of the land that comes down right before the confluence of the two rivers, all the way down at the point there. And the district has constructed projects there in the past, mitigation areas, but land that's not essentially usable for anything other than recreation purposes. So in the past, we have established a collaborative program at the request of Nebraska Game and Parks Commission to allow the youth-mentored hunt to occur on this land. And this has happened for, I think, the last 8 years. And the previous agreement was 3 years ago. And that agreement was set to terminate in November of 2017, and so we're now recommending a new agreement that is essentially the same agreement to allow Game and Parks to work with volunteers to mentor youth in learning about safety and good hunting practices on recreation land that the district owns. There are a few very minor changes in the language in the agreement, but it's not anything of substance. We are recommending an extension from 3 years up to 5 years because we've gone through a couple different three-year cycles on this agreement so far. There are no other plans for ongoing future projects or other conceptual use at this time for the land for any other purpose because the condition it's in now, you can't really do anything other than use it for recreation. So we're recommending extending that agreement out to 5 years through December of 2022. If you go to the next page, Bill, let's see, one more then. Yeah, I received an email from Aaron Hirschberger. He coordinates this program from Game and Parks. If you scroll down a little bit, you can see the description of some of the activities that have happened since the last couple seasons during the agreement that is just completed. So youth go out, and they're roughly between the ages of 11 and 18, kind of up through high school. They learn archery hunting, primarily deer, and then at the end of the year, each season they do have a banquet where most of the food is from deer and other game that have been harvested by the youth and with their mentors. And so you can see a number of youth through this program have been able to get their first experience with hunting, their family and local tradition, and then even get their first deer through the program. So Aaron and other Game and Parks representatives are very appreciative of what we do here. There's no financial cost to the district, and there's no financial reimbursement from Game and Parks for the program, but it's just a good benefit from recreation lands to a specific community benefit program. So we're recommending to essentially reauthorize the agreement. There's a couple changes highlighted in yellow, but the only substantial change is just that that top line that indicates changing from 3 to 5 years. And as Director Connolly noticed, this is now referred to by a different name, the Platte Elkhorn River Habitat Area. The former name, Wenzel's Island, is not really used anymore. And so we're making some changes. The agreement draft will be updated to reflect that new recreation area or hunting area name, habitat area name. And we'll have that updated draft by Thursday if you want to look at it. But that'll be the agreement that we'll then sign and ask Game and Parks to sign.
Chair, to entertain a motion.
A motion for staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Anyone in the public wish to speak? Being the directors? Director Teaser.
Sorry, go ahead.
Jeff, go ahead.
Just a general question. How large is Wenzel's Island?
The Platte Elkhorn River Habitat Area is several parcels. If you look at the map,
400 acres.
So it's several parcels from that access point. There are some cabins out there and some other property owners. Property lines move around a little bit. There's that one large parcel right there with a flat part on the top.
It does say Wenzel's Island.
The change in naming came after the attachments were put together and posted last Thursday night.
We're scrubbing all documents.
They will be updated for the
I'm just going by Wenzel's Island.
In the process of updating.
But refer to it in its proper name. Right. Like from now on.
Question on acreage, Eric.
Yeah.
You mentioned 450 acres. Does that include the water area as well? Because we own water area as well. And how much of it is land and how much of it's water then?
More water than you think. It's probably 150 acres of water, 300.
Thank you.
How many dollars did we pay for that? About $2 million?
I'm sorry?
$2 million we paid for that, didn't we? Or?
Not quite. I don't know.
I see another hand.
It wasn't too far away.
Director Thompson.
I just want to say great program. I remember when we instituted many years ago, and I know there's been a lot of arrows shot, and they didn't hit anything, but great area to get kids out, you know, away from TVs and everything else, and nothing but goodness has come from this. So I highly support it. I'm glad we moved it to 5 years because it's just, I think it's a great program.
Director Bradley, did you want to speak?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Youth only? This hunt spot? Or?
Yes, and I think there is an age requirement in the guidelines for the program. It's not in the agreement itself, but there is a mentor who goes with youth. Usually it's something like a one-on-one or one mentor with two youth, so relatively small groups because that's what works when you're out in a blind and hunting. But yeah, it is a mentored program. So the mentors are there to, usually they're in the tree, watch them hook in, climb up, pull the equipment up the tree. And then are usually in another blind kind of a short distance away, so they're close together and working something like collaboratively. The mentors are very dedicated, and so Aaron did point out that mentors often will see a deer walk by and defer and let the deer walk past to give the youth a shot rather than taking the shot themselves, because the function is to get the youth out and engaged, and so that's a common thing that happens.
No, but only youth, so no adults can hunt on this island.
The mentors can.
Oh, yeah, only the mentors, and only when they are mentoring. So they can't go out on their own unless they are preparing for a hunt. They can do some blind setup and that kind of stuff. But there's no hunting by the mentor without the youth present as well. It's always a teaching exercise. It's not allowing anyone out there who wouldn't otherwise have access, anything like that.
Director Teaser.
I do have some problems with that, as I expressed to staff about the mentors actually hunting, shooting, you know. I do have another question that arose today. At the property entrance, some of that property is owned by Winter Quarters, and then the road swings around and is on their property, and then some on, and they use some of the NRD's property. I'm concerned about the liability issue. Is that, would there be any liability for Winter's Quarters, seeing as how we're accessing through some of their property and they through some of our property?
So from the map, this was a hand outline on the parcels. They kind of jump around in a number of different areas. So this, the total area that is owned by the NRD is slightly different than this. This is not a legal description of the parcel, so it does move just a little bit. On the east side, it cuts over a little more toward the Elkhorn River. There is a little bit of maybe another 100 feet of property north that is that access area. I haven't actually been out to the site in person, so I defer to Marlin about location and access point.
There is some of the road, when it comes down, it swings onto Winter Quarters, and then it swings, goes, you know, the roadway that we're using does swing. And, and at the entrance, there's some concern. There was, all I'm trying to do is cover their liability.
I think we legally own the road coming down. I think there's a little where the actual road is and where we own, there may be a very drive. We do own an access strip that terminates at a county road, but we have public access.
Well, that, again, that wasn't the issue. It was the fact that, And the other concern I had, and I was hoping a rep would be here from Game and Parks, the agreement calls that, and when they're waterfowl hunting, that the mentor must be within 70 yards of the youth at all time. And the question I would have, does that mean that the mentor is going to be in a different blind than the youth? And that is a real major concern with me, because there's no way youth should be left alone with shotguns separated from a venture. I've done this too many years in adjacent property where we mentored kids. And I'd like to get an answer on that before Thursday.
We can follow up with Aaron. I did ask him if he could be here. He had another engagement tonight, so he couldn't be there. As regarding the waterfowl program, as far as I know, this agreement allows them to participate in a waterfowl program, but they haven't to date done that, as far as I understand.
No, they have, but the last several years they haven't, but they have. They're blind down there.
Rich, and the ones I've talked to said they've always been with them in the blind.
Okay.
But that's just a couple that I've talked to. Yeah.
And Aaron mentioned specifically with the deer hunting that they might be on their own with the deer hunting, because the proximity needed to get, you know, 15 or 20 yards from a deer for a youth to make that shot. They don't have blinds that are generally sufficient to have an adult and a youth in the same blind.
Would you check on the waterfowl
front? On the waterfowl side of it?
Yes.
Yes.
And
we'll find out about that.
Would definitely want the mentor to be with the youth in the blind.
Any other comments? Director Tom.
So, Rich, are you saying on page 3 of the agreement, just eliminate the 70 yards? There's two different places.
I'm sorry, Jim, I couldn't hear you.
On program overview, paragraph 5, on page 3, it talks about mentors shall be within 70 yards for the deer and turkey and youth waterfowl.
Yeah.
So you say
my concern is that the mentor may be in a lay-down blind.
So what language would you...
Well, the mentor will be hunting adjacent next to, in the same blind as the...
Instead of the 70 yards.
Yeah, and eliminate the 70 yard being
okay. That sounds
specific to hunting with a shotgun. But with the archery hunt, it would be okay if they were...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's understandable with archery, but it's not acceptable, actually, for the waterfowl.
Sure. I will talk with Aaron about that.
And, you know, you want a kid swinging his gun and shooting and hitting a mentor 70 yards away, and you can kill somebody at 70 yards.
And the follow-up on the question Director Bradley talked about, if only the youth, and that's identified in this little memo, have been harvesting deer, this agreement doesn't restrict the mentors from hunting.
I think in the back, under section 7, maybe, it indicates that there's some reference to Yeah, if a mentor harvests an antlered deer during the mentored hunts, the following deer must be antlerless. So there are some restrictions on what that the mentors can do, and I'm not personally a hunter, so if there needs to be any additional language here about what the mentors can and cannot do, I think Aaron would be open to that. I think it does allow them to hunt, it looks like, probably one animal during the mentored hunts, but not beyond that.
Well, why would they do that if they're mentoring the youth?
Again,
I'm not a hunter, but Larry is. He killed big animals. You know? And if you're out there mentoring youth, if you're out there mentoring youth, I think you'd put your shotgun down and let the youth go after it. If he misses, fine, or whatever. Do we need to research this? I guess I'm throwing that out as a question for the board.
Somebody might be over
there. And I have one last question. Number 7K, wanted just to qualify that if a mentor has a second license, that he will have to have a youth with him to fill his license. He won't be able to go out there on his own and fill that second license. He can only hunt as long as when there's a youth with him. And this is a little bit evasive, I thought, in that particular paragraph.
So you want to clarify it?
I'd like it clarified, absolutely.
Any other questions?
I'd just like to quantify for the record, I harvest animals from time to time, and for the meat, I'll make the...
Thank you, Greg.
So, did you want to make another point?
No, sir.
Okay. Any other comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Thompson?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Heiser?
Yes.
Hunter?
Yes. Okay, now we're moving up to 909 is review and recommendation of Chalmers Hills 156 Street Trail Paving Project. These are construction bids. Zach Nelson, please.
Good evening. So when the Chalco Hills Recreation Area was built in 1987, it contained an asphalt trail around the perimeter. In roughly 1990, this cutoff trail was created across the southwest area of the lake. Since then, the trail, the asphalt started to fall apart. So over the years, it's been replaced with concrete. These two sections down by the bridge are the only two remaining sections of asphalt left. So internally, we prepared bid documents and solicited subcontractor bids to replace these two sections. The north side's a little over 1,200 linear feet long, south side's 660 feet long. We'd be replacing the asphalt with 6-inch thick concrete, 10 feet wide, which would allow our crews to drive some of their larger equipment on it. A total of four bids were received, ranging from $118,000 to $174,000. Dostal's Construction was the low bid at $118,376. Dostal's has done work for the district before in the past and is a reputable contractor. So we are making the recommendation to proceed forward with this work with Dostal's Construction.
I can move staff recommendation. Thank you. Is there a second, please?
Second.
Anyone in the public wish to speak? Being the directors? Roll call, please.
Aye.
Fowler?
Yes.
Heiser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you, Zach. That was short. Item 10, review and recommendation on the FY 2018 replacement vehicle purchase. Nicole Gus, please.
Bill's going to be joining me tonight. This past September, the board approved the FY 2018 budget, which included $99,000 allotted to the purchase of three district vehicles. In October, the board approved the purchase of these three vehicles for a total amount of $70,415. So currently, $28,585 remain unused in the approved vehicle budget. The staff has identified a current district vehicle that at present has diminished use due to its minimal hauling and towing capabilities. I don't know if you
mentioned
anything on that. Okay. It is not heavy duty enough to perform the way the park department needs it to. And so in an effort to keep the vehicle's useful condition, avoid large maintenance costs, and still follow the replacement guidelines, we are recommending that you purchase a replacement vehicle for the 2006 Ford F-250. It has almost 125,000 miles and is close to 7,000 in maintenance costs. So we took three informal bids, and the lowest and best bid is our recommendation from Woodhouse at $25,134. And that's for 2018 Ford Super Duty F-350. And that would be with the trade-in of the district's 2006 F-250.
Chair, to entertain the motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Is there a second? Director Teaser seconded. Anybody in the public wish to speak to this? Seeing none, directors? Yes, Director Thompson.
Bill, of the $6,906 in maintenance costs, I assume that number came from the record of oil changes.
Front end, ball joints, tie rods.
Brake jobs.
Rear end, carburetor, all that.
Carburetor, okay.
Any other questions? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Are you done?
We're done. You took a breath.
You want to talk about tie rods?
My point is that it looks like pretty ordinary, but
yeah, it is.
That's, I'm done.
You're done. Okay. Any other comments? Well, roll call, Director Teaser.
The vehicle is being overstressed, is it not?
Yes. It's not heavy enough for what we use it for. We pull skid loaders, mini excavators. And it's got a service body on it and a 3/4 ton bit. So it goes to 1 ton. So it'll handle the weights. We can use it and utilize it more than the I'm trying to get things in this park stuff. So we utilize this more of the stuff that we have. Get better and safer for the guys. We want to be as big as I can for all of our employees. So this is one of the things that, and it's going on 12 years old. Got quite a few miles.
Is that diesel?
It's rusting out. These tires.
Is that diesel?
No, it's gas.
Is that EcoBoost engine?
Any other questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Fowler?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
Ms. Sherper?
Yes. I believe that concludes our agenda. We are adjourned.
Anybody need to take a break?
What was your no vote pronounced?
Everybody good to go? At 7:23, we'll call the FEL subcommittee to order notification of the Open Meeting Act, as stated earlier, is posted in the back with that quorum call. Oh, I'm sorry. Director Weiss will not be here. Director Conley, will you fill in, please? Thank you.
Matthews?
Here.
John Conley?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Greg Conley?
Here.
And Jefferson?
Here. Item number 6, adoption of the agenda.
I move.
Second. Adoption number 4, excuse me.
No, it's not.
That's close. Roll call.
John Conley?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Andrew?
Yes. I have before me proof of publication of the meeting. Moving on to item 6, review and recommendation of fiscal year 2017 audit. Terry Fry and Zeke Gerlitz from HSMC Horizon. Good evening.
Good evening.
A good report, I understand.
Yes, very much.
Thank you. Good evening.
We were here last month and presented the draft of the audit report and a fair amount of detail, at least on an overview. And the report you have for us tonight is a final issued audit report, and a letter to the board regarding other matters regarding the audit. Glad to answer any questions or things you might have.
I'd like to move staff recommendation.
Is there, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Would anybody from the general public wish to make a comment? Staff, directors? Thing, director, staff.
I had one question, so I think you may have answered this before. How many years have you done the audit for the NRD?
7 years.
Yes, that sounds correct.
Seven?
Yeah.
Seven. Okay.
Seven.
And this is fairly typical of what you're seeing every year.
Yes, the district continues to have very good internal controls. Commented in the past that for particularly your size of the size of the accounting staff, the controls that are in place are rather strong for the number of personnel that you have engaged that you have working for you, and so. But we continue to tweak that as time goes on each year. So, yeah, staff, leadership has done a very good job of continuing to refine and develop internal controls. We made, I think during the audit, we had four entries that we proposed and posted as part of the audit. All those were related to essentially the bond refinancing and refinancing costs. So what that means is from a general accounting day-to-day type of thing, Carrie and her team have done an excellent job.
But compared to other companies that you've audited, this is, compares very favorably.
Absolutely. Yep. Very much so. Yep. So good work.
Director Conley.
And I'm very pleased that this audit reflects very favorably on the staff. Carrie and her staff have done a great job. I'll say a little more Thursday night.
Anyone else wish to comment? Things on roll call.
Yes.
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Carrie, I want to compliment you on your input tonight.
Thank you.
There being no further business, we stand adjourned.